reopen the subcommittee of the House SR2 Committee, and we're going to start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 51. And we have a relatively short list of people signed up to speak on Senate Bill 51. So with this, if we could have Mr. Terry Witt, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and Chuck Craig from the Oregon Department of Agriculture to start out, and I believe that you will be able to walk us through the history and evolution of the bill. Is that correct, as it came to us from the other body?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. Passing out some testimony that basically outlines our involvement in the basically the drafting or the amending of Senate Bill 51 and Senate Bill 208. A number of months back, there were 13 Senate bills that relate or related to the 1010 process that came to Senator Meserle's committee, and he at that point asked me to chair a work group of some 18 representatives to see if we could in fact reach some consensus on a number of issues related to the 1010 process. As chairing that effort, I thought it was important to first of all see if we could find consensus on any priority bills within the stack of 13. Second, to group the remaining bills by issue and work through those on a subject by subject basis. Excuse me.
We will close the subcommittee and open the full committee at this point. Thank you, Terry. I'm sorry for the interruption.
No problem, Mr. Chair. Following working through each bill on a subject by subject basis, the idea was to select one or two bills that could be used as a vehicle for all of the amendments that were agreed upon so that that bill had a high probability of passage through both houses and also the governor's desk. And I think the fourth and equally important objective that I had was that we would leave as many bills unchanged as possible and take no position as a work group with regard to opposing those bills, leaving the sponsors or the authors of those bills free to bring those forth if they so chose to. The bottom line was that we had 18 folks, and you can see on the list, I won't go through the list of names, we had 18 folks representing a pretty wide cross-section of the natural resource industry as well as the department, Department of Environmental Quality, also the governor's office. And the two bills that we were able to reach total consensus on were, first of all, Senate Bill 208 as amended, that is the next one of the next bills up in this committee, and Senate Bill 51, which was actually the repository of all of the bits and pieces that we were able to take out of the remaining 12 bills other than 208, and that was then brought forth to the Senate committee where it was passed and now currently is the Senate Bill 51A engrossed version. We support Senate Bill 51A as presented to you and would encourage and urge your adoption. Attached to the to this front page is a very brief overview of the 13 bills that we did consider as a work group, You can see the basic purpose of those bills and which portions of those bills we did in fact consolidate into Senate Bill 51. And at this point, I would like to turn it over to Chuck Craig, who I think can fill in some additional details.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the record, I'm Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, there were some issues that were discussed by the work group that did not really find their way explicitly into some of the bills because of the public position that Director of Agriculture Phil Ward expressed in a letter to Representative Greg Smith, and I would like to just to put those on the record for the satisfaction of those folks in the work group that were concerned about these. And you have with you for the record a letter dated February 1st from Representative Greg Smith to Phil Ward, and then a response from Phil to the representative dated February 20th. The three issues had to do with the selection of local advisory committees, sub-basin planning, flexibility, and fees. And starting with the selection of local advisory committees, the issue was, would we consult with the local county elected officials in the selection of the advisory committee? And Phil states very clearly in his letter here to Representative Smith that we will. Another issue has to do with sub-basin or planning flexibility, and will we allow for the flexibility within a sub-basin as long as it's within the umbrella of the overall plan? And again, Phyllis affirms in this letter that we will. And then finally, there's the issue of fees, and we have never instituted fees that are provided for in Senate Bill 1010. But having the ability to do that in the beginning was a requirement to demonstrate that we had the capacity to carry out the water quality program to accomplish its ends. And so what Director Ward says in this letter is that we will not ever establish fees locally without the support of the local community in developing the water quality management plan there. So, Mr. Chair, that's kind of a summary of these issues that people were satisfied that if we put this on the record, that this should not be an issue for the work group any longer.
Are there questions for Mr. Witt or Craig? Mr. Craig, I have had, as I think you are aware, a proposed amendment that could be here, which pertains to this particular bill. And it has to do with on page 2 of the A engrossed after line 3. Which basically says if the department or a designee of the department is unable to notify the landowner as provided in subsection 1 of this section, the department or designee shall obtain a search warrant prior to entering the land. I note with in conversations with the department and a subsequent letter from the governor indicating that he will veto a bill that has this language in it, which I believe members of the committee have or are about to have. and I am curious as to why it is such an odious thing on the part of the department to have to, you know, to be held to having to conform to the rules of the Constitution of the State of Oregon and the Constitution of the United States. I quite frankly am finding it very difficult to understand, you know, how the department finds this such an objectionable thing.
Fair question, Mr. Chair. May I respond? First of all, you're quite correct that the department is required to follow the constitutional guarantees against unreasonable searches and seizures. I think the first point that I'd like to make is that there isn't a proposal to apply this to all other agencies with similar authority to go on private land. And quite frankly, we are very proud of our record. We conduct over 60,000 entries of private property per year for a very diverse number of purposes that the department has without incident. And we're I guess puzzled by why we would be singled out in this manner to have this limitation put in our law, first of all, since this would still let DEQ or EPA go on people's land for the same purposes.
Well, Mr. Craig, follow up with you a little on that. As far as EPA is concerned, we would understand that this body here in Salem could not do anything officially as far as the Environmental Protection Agency is concerned.
Right.
It's a federal agency, and that's the responsibility of people who get paid a lot more money than we get paid in this building, sort of thing. however, the chair would accept a delay of this and an amendment, and would get an amendment drafted to apply to all of the other agencies in the state if you would get together with the governor and assure us that we could get the governor's signature on that.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I could speak for all the other agencies. What I was speaking for us and in our sense of pride in the way that we do business and in the lack of objections that we have from landowners, and so that's where our feeling about that comes from. But there are a couple of other points that if you would indulge me, I'd like to make. First of all, I think that we found recently that seemingly minor, innocent, innocuous limitations in our inspection authority are of great concern to the federal agencies that grant us the delegated authority to perform functions under the Clean Water Act. And so we have just dug ourselves out of the hole with EPA that we were in and the limitations on our inspection authority related to complaints, for example, were one of the factors that they objected to. So that's one thing we are quite concerned about that. The other thing in that vein is that what the amendment would do, as far as I can see, is that it would make it impossible for us to respond immediately to what is called an exigent circumstance. So if there is a situation that has occurred that we need to go on the property right away, we couldn't do that because we wouldn't be able to prove that we hadn't notified someone. This process takes time. You have to make an effort to notify people and prove that you did, or you have to get a warrant. So we'd have to go. We just basically would have to go get a warrant anytime we thought we were going to have to inspect something, and the although the provisions that have, the principles that have evolved from case law can be generally summarized in terms of if you don't get consent, you're not supposed to go on somebody's land. There are provisions for emergency situations and for situations when evidence would be lost if you can't get access. And I think this amendment would seriously interfere with those principles. And so that's an objection that we would have to it as well. And I discussed this with the Attorney General's office this morning, and they were in agreement with our concern.
The chair would have been delighted to try to work language that would have eliminated that concern for us. And we realize at this particular stage that that this amendment or this bill, one of the two, has no life. I mean, if there are votes here to move this amendment, it kills the bill, and if we decide to move the bill, it kills the amendment. And that's a seemingly pretty much a matter of record, assuming that we can trust what the governor has said. And as a consequence, it is not the intention of the chair tonight to move that amendment, but it is the intention of the chair to raise that point and to suggest that the chair is hopeful that subsequent legislatures down the line, as we look at this issue, look at it very carefully and look at possible revisions or modifications to this statute down there. And I don't pretend that in the waning moments of the session that I had the time or ability to craft the perfect language that might have covered all of the possible things that we might be concerned about. But we certainly would have welcomed the effort and the opportunity to try to do that from the department and the governor's office. But so much for my carrying forth on it. Mr. Witt.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd just like to add one note of clarification. I indicated that we had a very diverse work group, and as you can see, it does contain the names of quite a few natural resource lobbyists that you're quite familiar with. I just wanted to make the point that there were many of these folks who would agree with your amendment, and it was because we were trying to reach a consensus bill that we felt could pass, that we left that issue out of the 51 amended bill and left that open to some other vehicle that would not jeopardize at least what we were able to reach agreement upon. So I agree with you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Whitten. I do appreciate that. And it is merely for the record, I think, that I'm speaking tonight, and it's certainly not a reflection on the Department of Agriculture. This is not the department that it would be my intention to, start making exception. It happens to deal with this particular issue. And, quite frankly, if this were my home, and we were some state regulatory agency, I'd be very concerned about my constitutional rights. And I think in spite of how the people might feel here on this issue, I think if we put it back into our individual homes, everybody here would not be real anxious to have Big Brother, come barging in the middle of the night sort of thing. So I do think it's a factor. I think it's something that people in our state are concerned about. And I really would ask the Department of Agriculture to work with the natural resource people over the course of the interim to try to find some language that will provide a resolution to this so that we can raise the comfort level of the people in the state that are going to be dealing with this issue. And I think this is one of the areas that we could raise the comfort level the quickest with, if we could find something here that we could all agree upon. So with that, unless you have any response, I'll ask the committee again if they have questions.
Mr. Chair, I think you've summarized your position very well. We understand it and take it to heart. And Thank you.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions?
We're here to move bills.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, there are some other amendments I'd be happy to address if you would like me to. There are the A3 amendments as well.
Go ahead, while the staff is...
Mr. Chair, the A3 amendments are intended to explicitly show that any fees that were established in a water quality and agricultural water quality management planning area are subject to the legislative approval process for initiating or raising those fees. If you recall, a few sessions ago, the legislature passed Senate Bill 333, which required that if an agency establishes a new fee or raises a fee, that the following session of the legislature has to ratify that fee, or the fee situation goes back to what it was before. And so what this bill does is just it confirms that any Senate Bill 1010 water quality fee is subject to that provision of statute.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leonard.
The A3 amendments then would be consistent with the consensus bill.
That's correct, Senator Leonard. They were, Representative Leonard, excuse me, they were just omitted inadvertently in the drafting of Senate Bill 51.
We have any comments on the A3?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Several of these points were discussed, some of which were going to be handled through a letter by the director, Mr. Ward, and I think some of them were, in fact, covered in that communication on the record. Mm-hmm. This was one that I think many of the folks in the group felt was going to be included in the statute, as well as the statements made by Mr. Ward. And so it is indeed a subject that we did discuss and a subject that we had consensus upon.
Okay. Any questions?
We'll close the... I can't do that. I've got people to testify yet. I beg your pardon. We're still in the public hearing on Senate Bill 51. And I call Pete Test, Mike Dewey, and Tom McCoy at this time. See Mike Dewey.
I'm not big enough to handle all three, but I'll
try.
<That's>,
almost.
I'm looking and don't see them, so we'll hold for a minute on them. Go ahead, Pete.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, good evening. I'm Pete Test, Associate Director of Criminal Affairs for the Oregon Federation. I can be brief. Tom and Mike, Tom didn't make it, and Mike had to leave. I'm sure they have some testimony that they'll probably turn in later. I really don't want to take a whole bunch of time to tell you we concur with Senate Bill 51 and the dash 3 amendments. We agreed with that because and some there has been some indication that it just reiterates what's already in the statute, but for good reason. There's been some concerns because of the unfairness people that read it don't understand, and occasionally there's been some unhappiness. There's been some tough times with 1010, as it has been. We want to make it clear that those fees just weren't automatic. They were just like all fees in the state. And that clarifies it in the statute, so when people read it, we don't run into problems that aren't necessary. The problems out there are enough without adding extra. This bill, we think, does the job of clarifying as much as anything what was really meant in the statute. There's not the kind of changes any of us all agree with or totally want, but we do know it clarifies to eliminate some of the areas of hardship amongst the people that are involved with this or people don't like to try and clarify so we can get down to the real problem areas rather than striking out at areas that aren't. And we support this bill wholeheartedly and would hope you would move to the floor with a to pass and that amendment.
Chair has a copy of a letter from Brendan McCarthy, Deputy Legislative Counsel, subject the A engrossed Senate Bill 51. Enclosed are the A3 amendments to the A engrossed Senate Bill 51. And he says, although I understand that the amendments are the result of a compromise effort, I believe that the addition of the reference to ORS 291055 is unnecessary. ORS 291055 applies to all new state agency fees or fee increases adopted after July 1 of any odd-numbered year. Thus, a reference to ORS 291055 does not have any legal effect, but the language of 291055 does not already accomplish.
Chair Jensen, I'm not going to argue with legal counsel, and I guess I go on it not by what it does legally, but what it does on the ground as we try to put this program in place. And
okay.
There are sometimes some things that look kind of ridiculous in one place, but are probably something that are really necessary when we're dealing with real people in the real world. And this is a minor change that doesn't do much, but it will make things considerably easy out there working on this process.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Leonard. I'd refer to the letter dated today, May 17th, by Roger Wood, the Healthy Streams Partnership Coordinator from the Governor's Office. He says they don't support any amendments to either Senate Bill 51A or Senate Bill 208A. So, I mean, if it's not needed, and we're hearing from LC that it's not needed, I don't know why we'd want to jeopardize the bill.
Okay,
Terry?
Representative Jensen, Chair Leonard,
I
wouldn't know about that. You might talk about Niagara Terry to know if somebody's talked to the governor since then.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be in the building.
Mr. Chair, I have not talked with Mr. Woods from the governor's office. I think we had general agreement from everyone at the table that there would not be any amendment to 51A as it is now engrossed. I would be, you know, as you say, you are accurate that it doesn't really do anything other than perhaps help specifically with perception problems that we have out in the countryside, and that is that you know, that the department has the ability to unilaterally raise these fees up to $200 whenever they so feel, and I think just putting it in the statute at the right place is in fact important in terms of the implementation of the bill. Does not change any, Representative Leonard noted, does not change any statute from the standpoint, doesn't grant any additional authority or place any limitations. It is really for communication purposes to eliminate some of the misperception that's out there. But either way, Mr. Chair, I think the bill will work. And
Terry, in a large part, I think my comments on the Dash 4 amendment was really kind of a perception thing too. Not that it really changes anything or what anybody can do, but it changes perception of what, you know, some things. I guess I'm inclined not to move the Dash 3 amendments under the same circumstances that, especially as Representative Leonard has noted.
Mr. Chair, I think under the circumstances that would be fine with me. I don't have any disagreement with that. The other thing that is, I think, does support that concept is, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that point is also in Mr. Ward's letter, I believe, to Representative Smith. I believe that was stated in there that point about the fees being reviewed by the legislature. So although I think it would be better to have it in statute, I have no disagreement with particularly at this late date in the session.
Okay, thank you very much.
Pete Test again, and I agree.
Okay. Okay, we lost, Brendan McCarthy, I see, has come in the room, and would you like to enlighten us a little bit on the -3 amendment to Senate Bill 51 and the letter that I have from, or the note that I have from you in relationship to it?
Chair Jensen and members of the committee, I heard my name being mentioned on the closed circuit TV. I thought I should come down just further explain why that letter was written. And I certainly don't mean to hold the committee up any longer than necessary. 291.055, as I read it, applies to pretty much any fee that's not specifically exempted from its application. And it requires fees that are increased after July 1 of an odd-numbered year or adjournment of the Legislative Assembly, that those fees are in effect until the next July or the next legislative session, and if not approved by the Legislative Assembly, they are rescinded. So I'm not sure what the legal effect of referring to 291.055 and another section that already applies to that fee accomplishes, and similar to the testimony I gave a few days ago, it's sort of a belt and suspenders approach. We already have a belt. We don't need the suspenders.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brendan. Any questions? Okay. Appreciate your tearing yourself away from the seven-course meal and coming down to bring us up to date on that. Thank you. At this point, we have Mr. Myron, Glenn Stonebrink, and David. Okay, we'll hold those. But Mr. Myron and Stonebrink, if you would. And I think, Jim, you're the first one I have on the list.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Myron, representing Oregon Trout. My written testimony addresses all three of the 1010 related bills in front of you this evening. I was a member of the working group that reached consensus on Senate Bill 51 and Senate Bill 208, so we do support that legislation. And the other bill we opposed because it was all of the additional issues that we could not reach consensus on that were folded into that other vehicle. So that's about all I have to say. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Mayor? Thank you, Ken. Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. We had two brief things I want to talk about. One was in relation to what the assistant director for the Department of Agriculture speaking for the director, Bill Ward, on the fact that they would consult with local county commissioners on choosing the Landowner Advisory Committee. That was in lieu of us introducing an amendment to put it into law, and so we're satisfied with that. The other thing was just through what you were just talking about a moment ago in relation to the fees. And we understand the unnecessary part for the amendment. However, on the second page of Bill Ward's letter to Representative Greg Smith, the second line on the part addressing fees will, this is Bill Ward speaking, fees will not be imposed without support from the affected basin. So that is in addition to, as he states in the next line, to the law that's already in place. So we take him at his word for that and just wanted to make sure that that was clearly spelled out for the record.
So, Glenn, could I ask you a question? Are you supportive or opposed to or neutral on the -3 amendments then?
We see if there's an opportunity or if there's a possibility it would be vetoed, with the -3 amendments, we would say don't introduce them. This, the 51 in general, throughout the work group, we felt that this was a far cry from what we started with, but we did feel it was something, and we'd be willing to take that something and work on the other things that we were desperately in need of.
Thank you. David Alsop, oh, excuse me, anyone questions from David Alsop or and James Mask? Good evening, and thank you, gentlemen, for staying with us to the evening to bring your testimony to us. Appreciate your being here.
We almost got tied up in that big old mess down there. There were.
I heard that they...
That was the call of the house, right?
And, you know, Representative, if we can add a little bit to this, and, you know, in this body, we've spent a little time this session dealing with confined animal feed operations, and I was wondering if there's any relationship to the call of the house and,
I don't know how to
you know, whether we fall under EPA guidelines there or not.
Feed us. Yeah, feed us, and we'll tell you.
Okay, I'm sorry, gentlemen, please.
My name is David Alsop, a member of the Oregon Family Farm Association, and I agree on this, on Amendment 5A3. I wasn't support, but if it's going to take a chance to veto it, but, you know, I probably wouldn't want it in there because some of the other bill that are, you know, been working on is good, but I still think that you're talking that this, if they can raise this 200 fee at any time, now I'm a small rancher, barely make it by, and if I get my, make my tax payments in about 4 payments, and I'd all of a sudden get another tax bill, an extra $200. You know, that really, that's quite a bit if a department could just put it on. But, you know, if it's going to get our other bill that we've been working on vetoed, I could see the point of not putting it in. Cause, but what it's on this trespass deal, I just can't understand why. ODA, I just, it's so much against it. You know, I just have a, you know, how they can come on the property without, with just a call in on somebody and can come trespass on your property. I just have a severe problem. I wasn't going to say much on that, but then him sitting there and said he can't see a problem with that, and I, you know, that to me, that's a problem out in the country, especially. You know, it would really feel infringed on my personal rights that somebody just to come on any time they want. You know, even the sheriff's department in Douglas County has, you know, they even contact you. They won't come on your property without even contacting you. But that's all I had to say.
Thank you, David. Any questions for David?
I have a question.
Yes.
Chair Jensen.
Please.
Thank
Representative
you.
Smith.
Have you had any problem with the trespass on your property?
We have had with other agencies, mainly Fish and Wildlife. They've,
could you give me an example of what?
Coming across the property to do whatever to inspect the creeks that I have personally told them they couldn't once.
And they came anyway?
Well, no, because I persuaded them that they couldn't come in. But they would have. They have been there before because they always leave marks, ribbons, so they can see stuff from the road, which has been noticeable in our area. Everybody noticing these little ribbons showing up on their private properties and stuff. And it's investigation, we found out that Fish and Wildlife have been going down there doing their stuff and then marking where they could see the areas from the road, you know. And I know if somebody, I have a problem with the neighbor down my road. I raise some different animals. She don't like them, but she calls sheriff department every once in a while on me. Of course, sheriff comes out. Of course, everybody knows the sheriff there in a small town. But if she called ODA, they could come right out, trespass on my property. To me, that's a violation of my right, even though they're not going to, I know that I'm doing things right, they're not going to find anything wrong, but I shouldn't have to worry about going out there defending my property against anybody that can come on any time they want. You know, especially if they don't get a hold of me. You know,
you.
I can't see what the problem is that with the trespass. You know, I mean, they should, you know, I just can't see why ODA has such a problem with that.
Thank you, David. And we appreciate your comments on the record on that. James.
Yeah, my name is James Mast. I'm with the Oregon Family Farms, the Douglas County chapter. Listening to the ODA talk up here, just the skin just raises on the back of my neck. Why they can't just say that they'll either contact you or they'll have a search warrant. That's what our Constitution guarantees us. He says that they're going to do it by the Constitution. What's the problem of writing it, such as the Constitution says? Representative Smith, we have had the ODFW knock on people's door, and they were told not to cross the land. They turn their back and go back about their business, and they turn around and they're going right back through their own lawn to get back to the creek. So it wasn't a life-threatening thing for them. They just wanted to assess the creek, but they were told no, but went anyway. And one of the ladies that told me that was home alone with a couple of young kids, and she takes care of her parents that are pretty much bedridden. And when she turned around and seen him walking out her backyard, I mean, she was scared.
Mm-hmm.
And probably should have called the sheriff at state agency. What's she going to do? I just don't see why ODA or any other state agency would have a problem with upholding our constitutional rights. The $200 fee, such as you're talking about Dash 3, I don't see what they're... You know, I don't know why the governor would veto something that's already statute, but it would help, such as Pete Test talked about, it would help the small guy that don't know what that other statute is, as far as it's got to go through the legislature anyway, but if it was in here and explained that would be comforting. It's not what the Oregon Family Farms wants at all. They want to see that gone, but... I wouldn't want to kill this bill because of something being in there, but the family farms put in 7 different amendments over to the Senate side and basically got nothing. And when we're talking about the small guy, not the guy that makes 100% of his living off the land, because there's not that many of them out there anymore. But you go down into Douglas County, there's a lot of guys that they might make enough money to pay their taxes, such as David was talking here. They might make enough to make half of their living there. A lot of times you'll see where the wife has to stay home and take care of the livestock, and or vice versa, it could be the man. But one or the other has to stay home and take care of the livestock, but it pays half of their bills. But to me, when you can throw a $200 fee at somebody anytime, and they're doing everything they can to make ends meet, even if the legislature throws it at them, that's they need to take into consideration that the big guy, $200 isn't a whole lot to. That might be a meal in town for him, where the little guy, he has to skip a quarter of his property tax payment. The other thing that is very important to the Oregon Family Farms Association, and I've testified on this on the Senate side several times, and I even brought up the tape number and the hearing date back in 1993 when Phil Ward was working for ODA. He wasn't the head of it at that time. That this plan was supposed to be only for non-point source, and ODA is putting point source into our plan. which is supposed to be where Offa comes from, or not Offa, but the CAFO comes from. And I gave them, and I'll probably introduce this later on to you guys and read through this about the non-point source. But Phil Ward is quoted in here many times as talking about 1010 being a non-point source agricultural runoff plan. Never mentions anything. In fact, he says that's all it is in here, and I'll read that to you later on and give you a copy of this. And Clint Reeder was one of the drafters of this. He's also in here saying that that's what that is. And if there's something that we would really like to see this committee do, is to let ODA know that this is a non-point source plan. I sat on the local advisory committee for the Douglas County when they were drafting their plan down there. We were assured that that was a non-point source plan until about the last couple of meetings, and they started edging this 468B in there, which is the CAFO operation, which starts putting point source into our plan. And the Douglas County citizens were adamant about that not being in there, but ODA says, well, it's going to be in there. Mm-hmm. I would like to see if this committee could possibly let ODA know that they need to go back and look at what the hearings was in 93 when they wrote this bill, what it was supposed to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Mass?
I have a question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Jackson. Thank you, Mr. Mass. I want to go back to the trespass because you gave several examples of it. In the letter from the governor's office from Mr. Woods, it states the amendment addresses a problem that does not exist. ODA makes approximately 60,000 entries onto private land for various reasons in a given year, and the result has been very few complaints from citizens. Do you make complaints when these trespass happen?
It wasn't on my property, but these people, like I say, this one lady, for instance, was scared to death.
Right. Did she make a complaint?
No, she did not. I talked to her about probably a month after the fact, and I said, you should have complained.
Right. That was my concerns. Maybe we need to start making these complaints so they can't say it's very few.
I agree.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? We have no other witnesses signed up to testify on Senate Bill 51, at which point we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 51 and open a work session on Senate Bill 51.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Representative Leonard.
And move Senate Bill 51A to the floor to be passed recommendation.
Representative Leonard has moved Senate Bill 51A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Appreciate Representative Leonard's motion. I think the committee has perhaps an obligation, however, to discuss the A3 amendment. The chair has agreed to pull his amendment, at this time. But the A3 amendment, I do appreciate that the governor has said that he will veto any amendments. Whether or not whether that statement would have had to do with an addition like this, or whether it had to do with his ideas about amendments like the chair was proposing is another question. I realize there's no one here tonight that can really speak for the governor or the governor's office. Did you want to? For just a minute on that, Mr. Whitten.
Mr. Chair, although I do not represent the governor's office, I do believe that this would be an amendment that he would find agreeable simply because it is, in fact, a consensus that Roger Wood was part of. One of the things that could happen is that the amendment could be adopted
and moved, and would then could go, when it goes for concurrence, if we cannot get agreement by the governor's office, we could then remove it at that point.
Mr. Chair, Chuck Craig, for the record, I agree with what Terry has said, and this amendment is in relationship to an omission in the bill from the work group, and I don't think it's would be construed the same way as other amendments to the bill. So,
and appreciate your coming up with and volunteering to come up with it. And that was kind of where the chair was going, with this. I do understand what the governor was talking about in his other statements. I may not agree with them, but I understand what he was talking about. I wonder if this is what he was talking about and if this type of amendment was. And members of the committee, I would suggest that if we pass the bill out like this, in between the time it leaves here and we get concurrence on the Senate side, we can check with the governor's office to confirm whether he will sign the bill or whether he won't sign the bill. And if that's the case, the Senate can move not to concur, and we can on the House side agree with that, and no damage is done.
Okay.
So with that, Representative Leonard, I have your motion on the floor, and I'll honor
and
the motion.
And Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash-3 amendments. I'll withdraw my earlier motion and move the Dash-3 amendments.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate your help with this. Is there discussion on this? Is there objection?
Well, may we discuss it? I just want to understand this. So if the governor is not in agreement with the Dash-3 amendments, then that would be withdrawn during the concurrence process. Is that correct?
This bill, if we amend it, the Senate will have to concur with us. If the Senate chooses, if the governor will veto it, the Senate would choose not to concur, and we would withdraw the Dash-3 amendments.
Mr. Chair, if I may ask you why that is, when LC seemed to make it clear that it was unnecessary, why are we going through the process?
For the purpose of the folks have testified here to, not every small farmer out there has a Yale law degree. And when they read, they read the statutes and they don't necessarily know to look back in all of the places where it is.
If I may follow,
first,
then if that's the case, why would they look up 291-055?
They're going to be familiar with the law.
Mr. Chair, if I could just interject to help a little bit here. I think what we've heard is it doesn't make any difference. And from my perspective, I'm willing to give deference to the chair. If he wants to have that in and it's comforting, that's fine. I mean, what we've heard is it doesn't make any difference. If it does make a difference to the governor and conference, they can remove it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's worthy of a lot of debate. I mean,
okay,
people
right.
People ask
yeah.
questions about it.
That's right. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Leonard. I appreciate that. And as far as the chair is concerned, you'll understand that the chair is looking at the what the people are bringing forth and telling us.
And I understand.
Absolutely. Rather than having a personal agenda in it, I don't have.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I respect your trying to move an amendment that people are asking for, but I, on the same side, have people who will be watching my vote very closely and would not appreciate voting for the Dash-3, so I will be opposing that.
Okay.
I call a question.
Yeah, I just want to vote. All right. We'll the court call the roll. Dash-3 amendment.
I'm off the board.
Aye.
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 Representative Ward?
No.
Representative King? Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Leonard?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Aye. The dash three amendments have moved into Senate Bill 51. Representative Leonard?
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 51A as we have amended it to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Leonard moves Senate Bill 51A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
No.
Representative Snell?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative King?
Excused.
Representative Leonard?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 51A, having received constitutional majority, is declared passed. Carrier, the chair will carry the measure.
We will assist.
And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 50, and we have pretty much the same people. Start out with Mr. Witt and Mr. Craig. What I would ask of everybody is, I think we're all in awareness of everybody's position on these two bills, and I'd ask you just to explain for us what the bill specifically does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Terry Witt, for the record. I would like to defer at this point, if we could bring up Pete Test, since Pete is basically the author of the amendment, and just say that Oregonians for Food and Shelter fully supports the Senate Bill 208A as it is presented today.
Thank you, Mr. Test.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, good evening. I'm Pete Test, Associate Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Appreciate this opportunity to talk briefly on Senate Bill 208, which Oregon Farm Bureau Federation strongly supports. This bill is the culmination of some concerns we've had with the 1010 process since we started trying to put in an application several years ago. We have been concerned that the way the statute was written, that there was not clear that the regulatory authority, which was expected to come from this process, comes from the rules and the rules only, which are developed in the planning process. The way the statute read or reads now, you would be confused, and it would indicate to you that the rule or the regulatory authority comes from both the plan, which was developed, and the rules, which was never intended to be. The plan was supposed to be the process by which you were going to institute the process. It was not meant to be the regulatory authority for it. We've had concerns about that since the beginning. It's been quite a hardship on the committees, because when they do get into these plans, there's been quite a desire to make them quite specific with ideas and suggestions to people, and going beyond where you really want to go if you're going to have something that's going to be a regulatory piece of paper. And in doing so, it's caused a lot of consternation amongst them and the people that they're working for fear that what everything they put in the rule all of a sudden will become law and people will be regulated where they weren't intended to be. Although the department did not totally agree with this, they did put in verbiage into some of the plans to basically plead that it was the rules and not the plan. Our legal department and others still were concerned that we were up against the wall, so we spent with the department many hours before the session to review the statute and make it clear that the rules were the regulatory body or authority within the 1010 process and not the plan. This is the result of that work. It was amended because we found a few places as we were reviewing it that weren't quite as clear as we wanted to be. So basically, we've gone through here and tried to adjust the language so it was quite clear that regulatory authority stemmed from the plan, the rules, and not the plan. And we feel this is a very necessary thing. We feel it was really unclear in the statute. It will make the lives of the many volunteers that are on these committees probably a lot happier, not to mention my own. There's some selfishness here. And we will see better plans that will be also helpful to people in the process
and have a good solid set of rules that we can be clear that people will know what they will be regulated under. And with that, I'll answer any questions. I don't have a copy of the bill, but if we have specifics, I'll be happy to grab a copy to look at it and try and tell you what happened there. And I think and Chuck could help also because he helped draft part of it, as our legal staff did and many others. And we would hope that you would support this bill to the floor. It will probably be one of the most important things, at least right now, to help this process along that we have out there at the present time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tess. Questions for Pete? Representative Lee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know most of this bill inside out. We have worked on these issues for a couple of years, and I just want to say to the work group, I really thank you for your hard work on this, having been involved in some of the working sessions the last 2 years in the Clackamas on their 1010 plan. I know these two bills will make the process much better, and you deserve a lot of support for what you've done.
Thank you. Anything?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Chuck Craig with Department of Ag. We obviously support Senate Bill 208 very strongly. It's an important clarification, and it helps particularly with communities developing their plans to understand that being proactive and identifying issues and expressing a desire to do positive things for water quality will not come back to bite them later on somehow. And so we heartily support and endorse the bill.
I have a little bit in the question line on this, and if I understand some of the controversy that appears as far as 208 is overrules plan sort of thing. And am I to understand that the Department of Agriculture will have a set of rules that's applicable for the entire state of Oregon?
Mr. Chair, the water quality related rules go basin by basin in relationship to the water quality issues in those basins. There are some statewide rules that relate to some things that are common to all the plans. For example, the composition of the advisory committee, enforcement procedures, the contents of a plan that are required. There are statewide rules for those, but as far as the actual regulatory pieces that apply to landowners in a specific basin, those go basin by basin.
Okay, I think that's important, at least for the chair, to have on the record that this, in this regard, the rules are basin by basin, not a state by state sort of thing. Okay, are there other questions? We have, thank you very much. I don't think Mr. Dewey or Mr. McCoy have shown back up, so Mr. Myron and Mr. Stonebrink.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I can make my statement by the time he gets here, and that's
okay.
We run the work group, and we were part of the consensus group to support this bill.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Jim Myron with Orgatron, and we also concur and support the 208-A.
And again, Mr. Alsop and Mr. Mast. Okay, that's fine. Yes, James.
So again, my name is James Mast, and just a couple of things on 208. As a committee member down in Douglas County, we were told all along as we were developing the plans that the plan was never enforceable. We found out when the rules showed up that the plan was enforceable. And this is just one of many times that we were misled on that committee by the ODA as we wrote those plans. Also, I think that 208 should The thing that 208 has not addressed that I think it should address is that the rules should be required to reflect the plan, meaning that they look at that plan and that's what they adopt the rules out of. Because then they're listening to the concerns of the people within the water basins. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Master. Again, I appreciate your being here tonight to testify on this bill. Are there any questions? That's all the people that I have signed up to testify on Senate Bill 208. At which point, then, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 208 and open a work session on Senate Bill 208.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leonard.
I move Senate Bill 208 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Leonard has moved Senate Bill 208 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just want to make clear that 208A.
Yeah. 208A.
I'm sorry.
A and gross, yes.
Thank you.
No further discussion. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative.
Aye.
Representative Wood.
Aye.
Representative Snell? Aye. Representative Cruz? Representative Omey? Aye.
Representative Leonard?
Aye.
Representative
Hayes? Aye. Chair Jensen? Aye. Motion carries. Chair will carry. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 208. And at this time, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3547. And staff has run off on me. Hopefully getting food for us or something.
Hopefully.
I should have a sign-up sheet just over there. Thank you. I have Mr. Welch and Mr. Stonebrink. First, please, Jim.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. House Bill 3547, put together Representative Greg Smith gave us a letter, and we were able to have a hearing. You gave us a hearing on this in the past, a month and a half or so ago. We talked about it, but this is your proverbial gut and stuff, and it does include all the language. We went through ORS 568-900-568-933 and made the amendments, including Senate bills, some language in the Senate bills that you just heard, 51-208, also 52 that may be coming to your committee, I think Senate Bill 226, 224, there's some other language there that we included also, Senate Bills 51 through 57, and a few other tweaks that were included in this particular bill. And we wanted to have a chance to talk about the issues on Senate Bill 1010 and the changes since 1993. That's why we wanted to do this, and we felt this that the changes would give us a little more reasonable bill, reasonable Senate Bill 1010 from 1993. It stems from that argument, for sure. And we believe legislation was developed back in 1993 under duress. At that time, there was a threat of an initiative, and they put the bill together, and certainly there was a split legislature at that time, and they didn't get the kind of language in there that they would have liked to have, I'm sure. So that's why we want to represent a lot of the small family farmers out there, a lot of people out there, Mr. Chair and committee members, that do not, to this day, know Senate Bill 1010 language and what it will do, what the requirements are, okay? Some of them are becoming more and more involved with it as they're putting local advisory committees together. We know that. But what we feel we have put in this bill is more reasonable and would better reflect what the intent of the 1993 legislation was. And they clearly, in their tapes, were talking about an Oregon approach, which was to agriculture non-point source pollution and not bringing any language in on point source. These farms and ranches are already under DEQ and EPA regulation when it comes to point source. Non-point source is going beyond. This bill does not take that away. We still have the ability to regulate non-point source, but it would soften the effect to the private property owner and the landowner. And that's why we have brought you the Gut and Stuff House Bill 3547 to better reflect what went on during the interim. And those bills that were put together by that interim Natural Resource Committee here, representing an awful lot of individual landowners, ranchers, and farmers that came here to give testimony, when they found out they had to develop, through the LAC process, plans. And then they had some resulting problems dealing with ODA, because ODA certainly, under rule, wants to establish some things. They feel, as an agency of authority, they need to do that. Okay, so there's a rub. Although they've had a great past dealing with their farmers and ranchers, and if we're going to deal with ODA or DEQ, most of the landowners would choose ODA. There's no doubt about it. But there have been some conflicts as they're putting these things together, because they feel there's not enough protection unless they're doing things on their advisory councils according to rule. And we've established some of those things in this bill also. So because we believe that if EPA comes in or a third party is going to challenge, if the people are doing according to what they should do on their property that's protecting streams, according to water quality management plans, and according to certainly those rules, that they will be protected, okay? And the department's protected also in that aspect. So this is creating some problems out there, and that's why you hear from our grassroots people that things aren't going very well with ODA and the people they have out there working with the grassroots, and this is true. I've talked to a number of them. They don't like what's happening because they have to live by a rule. And they didn't know this rule was here. They don't to this point in time until they start working on these local advisory councils. Well, this is the rub. But we wanted to soften some of this, and I'll take you through some of the amendments very quickly here in our bill. And we devised under the Section 1 a template. Now, that would include what is already in statute federally and state. That would be all the template represents. And the rules would have to reflect that also. Section 2, the new subsection, which we added, would give a little more. We felt there needed to be, and we talked about it in our work group, a preamble, a statement of principles here. And that's what you see there in subsection 2, little a, b, and through e, is a statement that the Legislative Assembly finds. And it brings into the fact that what we've heard since 1993, these were locally adopted plans. Education and voluntary efforts at the local level are preferable to undertaking regulatory programs at the state level. We've even heard Department of Agriculture talk about that and say that's what 1010 is. But when you go back, when you read the ORS, that's not what you read. You read a very strong regulatory act that doesn't reflect what they're talking about when they're talking about the intent. You go back to the tapes and you hear the intent. So progressive implementation enforcement practices exercised by State Department of Agriculture can ultimately enhance the plan process. We realize that can, if they work with private property owners in an education voluntary effort, which is locally based. And that's what we'd like to see, and that's what we implemented under the salmon plan. But what we see in Senate Bill 1010 is it is an enforcement legislation used and provided to the Department of Agriculture for agriculture. And that's why they want to keep it and keep it strong for stream-side protection, for in-stream protection, for water pollution issues. And it is pretty strong in nature, and that's why we're trying to tame some of this down a little bit. All right, Section 3.
Is he here?
This brings in the total maximum daily load for a body of water. That was the original language in our House Bill 3547. And why we wanted that to be a triggering mechanism is that we already have established, and under DEQ authority, that according to the Clean Water Act, which is a federal act, that we will have a number of streams that will have to be water quality tested. Some will be limited. At that point in time, we felt that that would trigger the necessity for a water quality plan, and the Department of Agriculture then would be working with those people in the watershed. But included in this language is also the ability for a watershed to implement a plan. We felt above and beyond that triggering aspect, okay? We felt there are streams out there that are not water quality limited, and they do have the efforts ongoing right now to put together a plan. Now, we didn't intend to subvert that, okay? And also, they want to work together, just like they do today under the salmon plan. We thought that was very positive, so we wanted to include that and their ability to do that. So we did not stop at that triggering aspect. We included language that would allow them to continue, okay? Sub 2 under Section 3 is replaced with new language. This is language is also included in 52-2. It requires the department to show a statistically valid scientific basis for concluding that the condition of the land contributes to water quality impairment. And it continues on in sub 3A and large A, further provide direction to the department, including parameters to be considered when they're putting together a water quality management plan also. And this would be supported again in language here in subsection 3C, requiring the department to promulgate rules supporting the template that is based on statistically valid scientific information. Section 4 provides just prospective implementation language. Section 5 includes language directing the Department and State Board of Agriculture to adopt rules based on a template. Also, Section 2A under Section 5 is amended to clarify that present facilities won't be required to be removed. Maintenance is the issue. We discuss that in our work group also. And that's why that we included that. That was in Senate Bill 51.
Mr. Chair.
51A.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Jim, but I don't mean to interrupt you, but in listening to your testimony, a lot of the and reviewing the bill, a lot of it seemed very familiar. So I opened up Senate Bill 208, which we just passed. Section 3 of your amendment is in direct conflict with Section 1. Senate Bill 208 that we just passed. This is just sitting here going through this. Section 5 is in direct conflict with Section 2 of Senate Bill 208 we just passed. Section 6 is in direct conflict with Section 3 of Senate Bill 208. Section 7 is in direct conflict with Section 4 of 208. Section 8 is in direct conflict with Section 6 of Senate Bill 208. And Section 7 is in direct conflict with, Section 9 of your amendment is in direct conflict with Section 7. And I appreciate that people should be able to testify as long as we want them to, but I don't know where we're going with this. This is directly opposed to what we just decided we weren't going to do in the language, and I just don't know.
Okay. I think Mr. Welch has heard your question. Let him, if he will, respond. Jim?
What we want to do, as I was explaining, is to represent what a lot of people out there in the farming community and ranching community today would like to see in the bill. We realize that the governor would not give us those particular Senate bills, 51 through 57, and some of those provisions in those. And we want to include them in a bill that we would hopefully be able to pass through this committee and have a discussion.
I appreciate that. My point is we just took action on, I mean, it's actually a technical point. I'm not trying to debate the merits. We just took action on a bill that amended sections of the statute that this bill, if we passed, would be in direct conflict with it. So, I mean, I like to be at least consistent, even if I'm in the minority, consistent in the things that come out of the committee, and I just want the committee to be aware that we're considering amendments that are in direct conflict with the bill we've already passed.
Mr. Chair and Representative Leonard, I can respect that absolutely, but I also we like to have our day in court also.
I like to go home and see my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a problem.
Mm-hmm. I just have just a few other sections just to get.
Could he clarify, please?
Even courts close at 5.
Courts don't have the problem of long-winded debate. You know,
I bit my tongue today, if you'll notice.
please, if you could.
Mr. Chair, what would you like to do?
Welch, I'd like to have you very, if you would try to very quickly cover it, because I do agree and understand what Representative Leonard is saying, and I do appreciate his point, and I know you do too, but I also appreciate your point that the other side of the story needs to be heard. Recognizing that some of it was heard in the Senate side, but this is a bicameral legislature, and you have a right to be heard on both sides. So,
Section 6, Mr. Chair, amends the trespass issue, and we included language from Senate Bill 53. Section 7 addresses enforcement action.
Too late.
Department may offer assistance to the landowner in correcting rule violations. We included that. That would soften the effect of enforcement. We felt that was very important. Section 8 includes requirement landowners to comply with rules. And Section 9 is also included in Senate Bill 51A, amendments addressing civil penalties. And we included their language. We felt that was a good approach. We realized that DEQ, we have to live with what they have in those penalties. And then we included Senate Bill 226 in Section 12, new language addressing third-party complaints. Section 14 is a repeal of the ORS 568-921. That removes the language in present statute referring to the department's ability to establish fees. And that is the bill. And those pretty much reflect all the other Senate bills that we had. And those bills were before us in our work group. And we have a problem in the central office. We probably would have been able to gain a few more of those provisions. That's all I have for testimony.
Thank you. Glenn, can I inconvenience you and stop the public hearing on this right now and give the committee an opportunity to have a little nourishment?
Mr. Chair, I respect your power of the chair. I'd be glad to comply. We're asking my permission, of course.
Some of us might even be a little more patient.
I'm trying to get this group, as mellow as I can.
I the wine.
Yeah. I thought about that, but discretion was a better part of valor. On
I will see my wife later.
Okay. At this point, we'll stay.